time, there's going to be a half-hour recess, but before we enter into that recess, there may be some announcements. Representative Ellis?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Though we've not completed all the work on this calendar, it is the Rules Committee intention to publish a proposed supplemental calendar for consideration by the body.
Okay. Representative Davidson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The House Resources Committee will meet immediately upon recess. And we have one bill to pass out, and we have a couple other bills to hear a lot about. Thank you.
Representative Lehman?
Mr. Speaker, if the member who just spoke would mind listing those bills that we're going to plan to pass out and hear, I'd appreciate it.
Representative Davidson?
We're going to pass out, hopefully, Senate Bill 423. We plan to hear a lot about House Bill 552 and House Bill 592.
Representative Donnelly?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Judiciary following adjournment here, recess here, and then we're going to be looking at SB 262, the minimum wage on hotel and restaurant employees, and SB 376, the insurance bill.
Representative Boyer?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll announce that the Senate or House Finance Committee will meet in, say, 10 minutes after adjournment for the consideration of two measures. The landlord bill.
What is on the calendar?
Yeah, so they're all on the calendar. Two pieces that are pending on the calendar. Landlord bill and veterans home bill.
Representative Donnelly?
Yeah, as long as we're doing committee announcements, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to notice up for 24-hour notice SB 396 as parental care for children in state custody.
Any further announcements? The chair, in listening to the announcements, feels that maybe an hour might be appropriate because some of these committees are meeting and trying to work. So that means let's come back at about 3:30. Mr. Majority Leader?
Just so the members are aware, I would hope that when we come back, we will be able to deal fairly quickly with 3:37 with the debate on that 125 and moving on down the line.
Okay. In recess until...
To call the chair approximately an hour.
Okay, approximately an hour or 3:30. Will the House come back to order? Before the recess, we're in the daily calendar. There is a call on the calendar, or on the next item on the calendar. Would the members, we had a quorum when we started before recess. Would the Sergeant of Arms get the members in here so we can continue with business with the House entities? House, come back to order. Before the at ease, we're in the daily calendar. We are a few members short. So, Madam Clerk, would you read reports of standing committees?
The Finance Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 8, State Affairs Amended, Annuity Program Amendments. Recommends it be replaced with a House Committee Substitute Finance and due pass. Attaches five fiscal notes. Signing due pass, Navarro, Brown, Larson, Ulmer, Copeland, and Boyer. With no recommendation, McLean and Phillips.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Sharp.
I should be a do not pass on that.
Would the clerk note that there is a do not pass by Representative Sharp on Senate Bill 8. Are there any more reports of standing committees? This brings us back, Representative Davidson.
May we have a brief at ease?
The House stand at ease. Order. Representative Lehman. Representative Boyer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we revert to introduction of guests?
Are there any objections? Hearing none.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to introduce a young page who's just completed his, he's a visiting guest page today, just finished his first year at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He's a son of Rebecca Miller, and Charlie and Rebecca are sitting in the back of the gallery here in the Warren Taylor Gallery. I'd like you to help me welcome Christopher Gooding. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further guests for introduction? Representative Bruckman?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the Paretovich Gallery, I'd like to introduce my husband. Would you join me in welcoming him?
Do we have any further guests for introduction? We're in the daily calendar, and last time, Mr. Majority Leader? There was some discussion that there was an agreement in relation or with dealing with Senate Bill 125. Representative Sharp, are you satisfied? Okay. Madam Clerk, would you read that bill, please?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 125, Hess, an act relating to pharmacies located outside of the state.
The bill is before us in third reading and under debate. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Representative Moyer is excused from the call of the House on specified times for a doctor's appointment.
Yeah, right.
Ready for the question? Question is, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 125, Hess, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Representative Navarre? Would the clerk open the roll for Representative Navarre? Is there any member that desires to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the... Will the clerk tally the board?
37 yeas, 0 nay.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 125, Hess, has passed the House. Representative Navarre has not had the opportunity to get into the routine of voting here yet. Mr. Majority Leader.
Up is the next bill that's on the calendar, 337. We're ready on that.
Would the House attendees back to order? Before the at ease, we're down the calendar to the next item that was put to the bottom, and that's SB 337. Madam Clerk.
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 337, financed by the Senate. House Committee substitute for Committee substitute for Senate Bill 337, finance, amended House. An act relating to retirement incentive programs for the public employees' retirement system, the teachers' retirement system, and certain persons under the judicial retirement system, and providing for an effective date.
Okay, the bill is before us in third reading. Representative Vollmer.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would move to return to second reading for purposes of actually three things, and I would seek the guidance of the Speaker as to which you would like to take up first. There are two amendments which I am offering based on discussions which took place on the floor yesterday, and I would like us to rescind our action with regard to one of the amendments that was adopted yesterday. What would you prefer?
Representative Vollmer, I suppose it depends upon the one where you rescind if the one that you're going to put forth is affected by it one way or the other. The motion, of course, is to go back from third to second reading for the purpose of amendment. Is that amendment, Representative Vollmer, that you're going to move amendment number four?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
My only inquiry, Mr. Speaker, parliamentary, is that a different amendment from anyone offered over the last couple days, number one? And if not, as long as reconsideration is available, it wouldn't be appropriate to move to rescind.
That is correct.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Speaker, the two amendments that I plan to offer have not been previously offered.
I see that, Representative Vollmer. So
at this time, I would like to move that we return to second reading for purposes of adopting amendment number four.
Are there any objection to moving back to second reading for the purposes of looking at amendment number four? Hearing none, we're in second reading. Representative Vollmer.
I'd like to move number four and ask unanimous consent.
Are there objections to amendment number four? Representative Randy Phillips?
This is too important not to have at least an explanation for the public record.
Representative Ulmer?
Mr. Speaker, this amendment attempts to deal with a concern that was offered yesterday. I'm not remembering who first offered it, but to provide some standards within the legislation with regard to the finding by the Commissioner of Administration that conditions warrant a RIP program. And so this amendment is offered to provide some guidance to the Commissioner when he or she might determine that it would be advisable from the state's perspective to enter into a retirement incentive program.
Are there objections to amendment number four? Representative Sharp, objections?
Mr. Speaker, I'm about halfway down it. I'd like to get the rest of the way. I would either ask for an at-ease or I'm down to page five. Give me a minute, will you?
Okay, would the House stand at ease? Back to order. We have amendment number four before us. Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I think this still does not answer my problem with one person having control for all practical purposes of our collective bargaining agreement, and then at the same time making the decision on whether people should have another chance each year. It looks like here, each year it's going to happen, at a early retirement program, an incentive program, won't be early retirement. We say in the second sentence of page 2, line 1, second part, that, or other comparable serious economic conditions may warrant such things. What about if the legislature cuts the budget? You know, if we do that, as we hopefully will be doing in the next year because of the shortness of revenues, then we're going to pay them early incentive program? What about the legislators determine that we're going to take more bodies out of each of the various agencies that we feel that there's an excessive amount in? Or even if it's not excessive amount, we feel the best way to cut the budget is to cut employment. Then the commissioner is going to be allowed to give them a new incentive program? This thing here, again, my major problem is allows one person too much powers to wheel and deal with the budget appropriation line items. We may save money, we think, by cutting a department, and he or she as administrator may turn right around and use those monies or opportunities for early retirement. I just don't like this particular responsibility or both responsibility being given to the same person.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With regard to the question as to whether retirement benefits are bargainable under collective bargaining, the answer is no. I have before me an Attorney General's opinion, and I won't read from all of it. It's just very briefly. It says, we believe that the Alaska Supreme Court would conclude, as we have, that retirement benefits are not negotiable under CARA. With regard to the other point that was raised by the previous speaker, that too much power vests in one person, that section is currently in the bill. The motion or the amendment yesterday to delete it did not pass. Mm-hmm. So it still is in the bill. I would urge members, even who don't particularly care for that section, to still vote yes on this amendment because it at least provides some standards, and I think everybody would admit that that does make it better. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker,
Representative Martin.
I don't want to beg the question, sir, but the reason why the people were convinced, in my mind, not to vote for that amendment yesterday was because the honorable person from Juneau said that she would solve that problem with a proposed amendment. And I don't see that problem solved, sir.
Any further debate? Representative Gonzalez.
Very, very short of these. Please, Mr.
Would the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? We still have amendment number four before us and under debate. Any further debate on Amendment Number 4? Representative Hanley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll just say that I, you know, I offered the amendment last night to take out the whole section. I'm still concerned about that portion of it, but this does make that better. I will support this amendment.
Are there objections to Amendment Number 4? Are there objections to Amendment Number 4? Yes. Hearing objections, are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 4 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
37 yeas, 1 nay.
Amendment Number 4 has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading. Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move that we return to second reading for Amendment Number 5.
Are there objections? Hearing objection, Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Speaker, very briefly on Amendment Number 5, concerns were raised yesterday by the Majority Leader and by a number of other persons on the floor about the standards under which one would be permitted to hire on a contractual basis a former employee. This amendment was drafted with the sponsor of the legislation to try to address that concern, and I would urge members to allow us to return to second reading to adopt it.
Are there any objection to returning to second reading? Hearing none, we are in second reading. Representative Ulmer.
I would move Amendment Number 5 and ask unanimous consent.
Representative Brandy Phillips.
I'm going to need your guidance here, Mr. Speaker, procedurally. I have an amendment, two amendments ahead of this that relates to this.
Well,
how do you want to handle it? Is that, I guess what I want.
I think, Representative, what may be probably appropriate, since we have Amendment Number 5 before us, is dispose of it one way or the other. And one way probably would definitely alter your particular amendments would have
to
be.
All right, let me ask the sponsor of Amendment Number 5 to restate the reasons why we should have this. And basically what I want to do is restore the exemption for the university teachers and researchers only.
Representative Ulmer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I might be willing to work with the sponsor of the amendment that we may see later on that, but I think that's a different question. The question here is, what standard should be applied if there is a contract to employ a former employee? And the concern was raised that it was too open-ended at this point, whether it's 1 year or 3 years or whatever. And this amendment says that there has to be a determination that the employee's specialized or extensive experience relates to that particular program, et cetera, et cetera. So I think it is helpful in terms of addressing the concerns that were expressed, and I would hope members would vote yes.
Mr. Majority Leader?
I think we may be able to resolve this. Could we have a brief of this?
Now stand at ease. Debate? Representative Phillips?
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to have to oppose the proposed Amendment Number 5. If you recall from yesterday, I had proposed an amendment to have a complete prohibition of former employees from coming back to the agency that they were ripped from. 3 years. So in other words, if the employee has a 3 year and out, then it'll be 3 years from that date before he can come back on a contract. This amendment, in my opinion, leaves a lot of wiggle room to get back in. And I sure don't want that to happen. Just read the amendment. It says, notwithstanding prohibition of this section, an employer may enter in a personal services contract with an employee if the employer establishes satisfaction of the Board of Regents or the Commissioner of Administration. Speaker, I'll just put it in simple terms. It leaves too much wiggle room to hire former buddies to go back either through political means or through friendships. And I don't want that to happen.
Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This doesn't do me any good as far as alleviating my fears of basically the same thing in the cases I referred to yesterday. From what I see down here, there's a lot of hand-holdings going on by the bureaucrats, and it wouldn't take much to get that approval.
Representative Taylor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It brings back up the same hydras that we were fighting yesterday. The teeth keep being sewed, and from them branch out new ones, it seems. My concern there was that should the employee wish to come back to work for, say, the university, they could very easily do that. Put them on as an employee part-time. That then triggers back against their retirement, and they receive their normal retirement check and that amount above their retirement check that reflects the difference that they would get as being a full-time person. Leave the words contract in, they get their full contractual benefit, plus they get their full retirement benefit. Literally, I was looking through those numbers from the university yesterday. There were some folks in there that were at the $85,000 level when they retired. So let's ballpark say that they retire at two-thirds to three-quarters, whatever it is, of their payroll. Well, that puts them in the 60s, about $60,000 bucks probably, a year retirement. Now they go back to the university for a year. The university was paying some of those folks $45,000 a year. Isn't that interesting? They had an $85,000 job, and now by retiring, they increase their paycheck to $100,000+ a year. It's no wonder they want the RIP program. I'd love it, too. You pick up a real nice increase in take-home pay. Plus, you keep all your benefits. All we've got to do is remove the word contract out of here by deleting this section. They can bring them back as an employee. No prohibition whatsoever. But all of these people want to have their cake and eat it, too. That's the reason we've got them coming back under contracts. Because under a contract, Mr. Speaker, they're making it all gravy on top. Another prime example, Department of Law. Rip yourself out of the Department of Law and then come right back and work on exactly the same cases you were working on before, only now you're doing it for $110, $120 bucks an hour, making another $100, $120,000 bucks a year off the state over and above your retirement. And who gave you the job? The very same supervisor that assigned you the case in the first place? There are some problems with this system. These reports. First off, when we started speaking about this, people were challenging us on the floor saying, well, come up with your statistics and show us where these things are going on. Well, we've now had the studies and the statistics put out here. There are problems. The simplest way to do it, don't let them contract. For that first three-year period, let them come back as an employee of the Department of Transportation. Let them find a PCN number to stick them back under. Let them find a slot to put them in that you and I have some control over in personal services, as opposed to some contractual line item. All of it's for the best, Mr. Speaker. Leaving contracts in here allows too much wiggle room to occur, as my colleague over here has indicated, and probably too many problems within the system.
Representative Kolpinen.
Okay, I'm not given to defending members of the bar often, but there's something to be said. I think we have had new appointees in the Department of Law, and we had some of the major former attorneys general resign and then come back in contract to help complete the cases they were on. That's quite true. The only thing, of course, is that they have with us, under the leadership of the current Attorney General, brought those cases to successful completion based on their research and their prior preparation for trial and everything, bringing to the state several hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, if we didn't do that, if we were going to prohibit the state from rehiring people like that under contract for the purposes, we would have let the oil companies get away with the money that they had. So there are times, I think, that it is justified. We do have to allow even this administration a certain degree of slack in picking people who know what they're doing and keeping them on for completion of tasks once started.
Representative Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I concur with the comments of the previous speaker. I know from the area of the resources, there are many, many issues that we've waited so long to resolve in this state that they have become court mandates. So over the years, these people who have become experts on behalf of the state because they are state former state employees have developed this, what I would call, for want of a better term, tale of knowledge. And believe me, Mr. Speaker, it's that knowledge that they've gained by being a state employee that will help and assist the state go forward with some of the litigation that we're facing, as well as negotiations that, whether it's dealing with territorial sea issues or mental health issues or other such issues that protects the public's interest. Thank you.
Representative Randy Phillips.
Speaker, sometimes there's a technique used to get away from the subject matter and by using an example. And that can be used for anything, but we're here to do a collective public policy. And I think there's more abuse with this, more negatives with this amendment than there are positives. And to get, you know, if you want to get real specialized, we'll talk about the attorney who worked on these oil taxes. Simple thing he can do, he can work for a law firm, and then that law firm can contract out for the state of Alaska using his expertise. So that's not a problem.
Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Speaker, just to wrap up on this amendment, I'd like to remind members what we're trying to achieve with this amendment. We're trying to put some language in the legislation that clarifies the conditions under which a former employee can get a contract to do a specialized piece of work for that department. Why are we doing it? So that the department, within its management decision-making powers, can determine a least cost alternative. We've heard a number of things on the floor today about $110, $120 per hour contracts. I just took a look at a few of the contracts that the Department of Public Safety had with hiring back on a contractual basis ripped employees. And let me give you just one or two examples to give you a sense for the way in which a former employee can be used at a very low cost to the state, lower than if they had to hire them as an employee. I almost fell out of my chair, frankly, when the minority leader was suggesting that we hire more state employees instead of contracting out. I mean, is this a little inconsistent? I mean, privatization, we're trying to contract out to save costs in some cases, as opposed to hiring more state employees? Anyway, the Department of Public Safety hired back Mike Cahornan, former retired Alaska State Trooper, former Training Academy commander, under a $4,200 contract to implement the department's new training efforts. I mean, $4,250 would be hard to hire an employee for that amount of money to do that job. It's an opportunity to take advantage of people with expertise for a small amount of money to be able to get the job done in a quick and efficient manner. There may not be money in the personal services line to get the job done. With a small amount of money through contracting, it can be done at the least cost method. And that's what this is all about. RIP is trying to reduce the cost of government. Not necessarily in all departments. There has to be a determination that it would, in fact, reduce the cost. But in the case of contracting, Amendment Number 5 just provides a standard for the employer to consider when they're making a management decision about how to save some money. I would urge members to vote yes.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 5 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk locked the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Gonzalez? Representative Gail Phillips?
From yay to nay.
From yay to nay. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
24 yays, 14 nay.
Amendment Number 5 has been adopted. The bill moves back before us in third reading. Representative Randy Phillips?
Speaker, I ask that we go back from third to second reading for a specific amendment, that amendment being amendment number 6.
Hearing objection, brief explanation of the amendment.
Speaker, this is a modified amendment to amendment number 1 that was made by me yesterday. There were some suggestions on the floor that may leave some people out. What the amendment number 1 did was to have to show an actual reduction in workforce and no replacements of people. This amendment says the same thing with the following exceptions. Police, fire, and these are the employees that work for these organizations. Police, fire, jail, prison, correction institutions, hospital employees, public utilities, snow removal for the grader, that was brought up yesterday. Sanitation, public schools, which was also brought up yesterday. And I might add that includes the University of Alaska. And any other educational institution employees. And that's basically what it is.
We are not at the debate stage of this. Are there objections to going back to second reading for the purposes of dealing with this amendment? Representative Vollmer?
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I read it, it is substantially the same as amendment number 1 in that it requires a reduction in the number of employees to be implemented. And for that reason, I objected to number 1, I object to number 6.
Okay. We are, the motion before us is to move back to second reading for the purpose of this amendment. The chair has allowed the sponsor limited debate as what it does, and the carrier of the bill, her response. Are there objections to going back to second reading? I take your objection. Okay. Are you ready for the question? The motion is to go back.
Go back. Okay.
Yeah. The question is, shall House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 337, Finance, amended House, be returned to second reading for the purposes of an amendment? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
22 yeas, 16 nay.
We are in second reading. Representative Phillips.
Speaker, I know it was real brief on that explanation, but I know what you were trying to limit our debate. Now I'll give a full explanation here. Yesterday I had offered amendment number 1, which would have put a complete shut off in hiring new employees while we're ripping some of the other employees out in their retirement system. There were some members of on the floor yesterday were concerned about certain employees. This amendment exempts those certain employees. One was mentioned about the snow removal people. That exemption's in here. Another concern was the public schools employees. That exemption's in here. What I've done is I've taken the Class 1A and Class 1B employees. Oh, Mr. Speaker, I'm sorry. I moved the amendment. You didn't say anything to me, so... Okay, basically what it takes the Class 1B and 1A employees, which are the most vital employees that we need, and gives an exemption from this provision of the amendment. And all other employees will have to show an actual reduction in order to implement this program.
Representative Vollmer.
Mr. Speaker, as we discussed yesterday when we discussed Amendment Number 1, the purpose of a early retirement program is to allow a manager to reduce the cost of providing services. That is not the same as reducing the number of employees. What you're trying to achieve is the opportunity to retire those employees who are at the most advanced step, whether they're teachers or truck drivers, at the most advanced step and hence the most expensive in terms of the provision of those services, so that you can hire a new person at the very bottom end of the scale and get the job done at a lower cost. That is the purpose of the retirement incentive program. It's been the same purpose as the other two. It has nothing to do with the absolute number of state employees. That was never stated in the earlier RIP bills. It isn't stated in this RIP bill. If you address yourself to page 6 of this bill, you will find that the standard by which a manager must determine whether or not they are eligible, whether or not a particular employee is eligible, whether or not that unit is eligible for RIP. It is that it must be a plan that results in savings in personal services costs that in any amount that is in excess of all costs to the employer. So that is what we're looking at. Is it going to cost the state less money to do this? That is the test. That is not the same as the number of employees, because you may be able to hire more employees at the lower step and get the job done. That's the whole idea. Mr. Speaker, I would urge members to vote no on Amendment Number 6.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Speaker, I had to rise because I pointed this out yesterday, and maybe it wasn't clear to people, and particularly the lady from Juneau that just spoke, that this is not a cost savings to this government. And if this bill is passed, if members will please look in their packets, you'll see that the cost in FY93 is $796,000. So to represent, I think, is unfair to this body to point out that it's a cost savings by passage of the bill just simply is not true. It's in your packets. You can look at it, and the cost in FY93 is $796,000, and it carries forward thereon. So, you know, I don't want the body to be misled, and I think that I brought it up yesterday, and I would just ask members to please just pick in your packets and see what the true cost is if we don't follow the amendment as laid out. Thank you.
Representative Palmer.
Mr. Speaker, I would direct the last speaker's attention to the line on the fiscal note that says general fund. General fund is a zero on this fiscal note. That is what the cost to the Treasury is. The other funds that he is referring to, which is not general funds, the other funds is retirement funds. That is what he is referencing. What you have to do is consider the cost or savings of the program in the context of the whole picture. I admit the whole picture must consider both general funds and retirement funds, but if you will look at the packet presented by Senator Duncan, when you look at what the savings were, as summarized and as actually validated by the budget and audit study that was done of the RIP program, you will see that between 1986 and 1987, the savings to the state of Alaska was calculated at $73 million. You know, we could go into some length. I don't think it's appropriate under Amendment Number 6. But on the subject of savings, you have to look at the whole picture, including the budget and audit reports. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall Amendment Number 6 be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
17 yeas, 21 nay.
Amendment Number 6 has failed adoption. Bill is before us in third reading. Is there any debate? Representative Randy Phillips.
Speaker, we still have another amendment.
The bill is before us in third reading. It's under debate.
Speaker, I move that we go back from second to third third reading, from third to second reading for a specific amendment, that being Amendment Number 7.
Okay, Amendment Number 7 should be on your desk. The question before us is whether or not we want to return back to second reading for the purpose of this amendment. Are there any objections to going back to second reading? Any objections? We are in second reading. Representative Phillips, move your amendment.
Speaker, move the Amendment Number 7.
Are there objections? Representative Ballmer.
Mr. Speaker, I have checked with the sponsor of the legislation.
Wait a minute.
One minute. Representative Randy Phillips did have the floor. I'm sorry. Representative Randy Phillips. Okay, let's all take a deep breath. All right. Representative Randy Phillips has the floor.
Yeah, give me a... Mr. Speaker, the representative from downtown Spadard wanted me to assure him that I would propose an amendment to take care of his concerns, and that's exactly what it does. If it doesn't, I'd like to hear it from the representative from Spadard.
That's the only thing he said that I've agreed with. Do you still want the floor, Representative Phillips? Representative Ulmer.
Mr. Speaker, I was just going to say I had no objections based on my conversation with the staff of the sponsor of the legislation.
Now, that's what I knew the representative was heading. Representative Ulmer does not have objections to Amendment Number 7. Are there any objections to Amendment Number 7? Hearing no objections to Amendment Number 7, Amendment Number 7 has been adopted. The bill is back before us in third reading. Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the third reading, we know the hour is late and sometimes people get a little impatient, but as you mentioned yesterday, this is the time we really got to evaluate and take a second breath and just look at the facts. I've read the report, and I know a lot of people don't have a chance that we on Budget and Audit have a chance to read on those reports and evaluate the various programs. It was said earlier that the program saved $73 million. I had not read that. I've never known that. But I can tell you what it says on first page, sir. The last WIP program from 1989-1991 saved $22,900,000. Now, when I first read that in the papers, I thought, gee, that was pretty good. That's per year. And then as I read the report, no, it wasn't. That was all 7 years. And then as I further went through the report, a couple of questions came to mind. And one of them said that there's 1,800 people at that time in the report. There's more that took advantage since, but 1,800 at the time of this report that took advantage of the early WIP program. And that they will calculate that from the various departments. You can see each department, how many people retired, what the average salary was, and supposedly what they saved. And they gave them, for each year, 5%, an average 5% increase in salary. Well, that looked interesting, but then a couple of things came to mind. I talked to one person over the department. I said, how many people would have retired anyway without a WIP program, OA incentive program? He said, the average between 400 and 500 citizens, worker to say, retire. And I said, well, why didn't they subtract that from the formula? You know, why should we have paid more? He said, well, I don't know. That's up to Budget and Audit, what they do with the information we give them. He said, he just wanted to know the total amount, not minus those who would have retired anyway. I said, okay, fine, I understand that. I said, can you tell me what was the increase in salary per year? And he said, yeah, I'll send that over to you. And he said, 1980, 9-0. But we calculated 5%. 1990, 3.2%. But they calculated 5%. 1991, 5%. And they put in the book here an accumulated 18% increase per those salaries. The true thing should have been about 8% or 9% average increase. So from the very beginning, sir, I began wondering, what in the world, how can we accept this as a report that the state really saved money? Especially when you go into the problem we had at the beginning of this year, that we had a heavy shortfall of retirement funds. And there's a nice report here that that problem had to be with the crush of people retiring early that wasn't expected that we had to suddenly pay for. Well, luckily now, the finance chairman worked with someone. We got that spread over the years. But that's not put in here, the $15 million needed to make the program actuarially sound. And so it's these factors that really made me wonder, what in the world are we doing? Why are we doing this, Hogan? That's unnecessary. At the beginning in 1986 or 85, when they first started, it sounded like a great idea. It sounded like the letters that we saw from BP and from ARCO and the oil industry when they really began having a tight problem, and the oil went to $9 a barrel, and they suddenly had a cut. Governor Sheffield suddenly had a cut, and he said 15% across the board, and he cut the cost of government. Well, we felt that maybe an early incentive program like private industry has would do the job. And it was absolutely calculated that this would reduce the total number of people employed in the state, and it did not. It escalated the number of employees, and the cost of government did not go down. It's still going up. The major difference, as this report says, budget and audit, private company gets rid of the position. Public employees just keep spreading out, we'll fill them in again. They said that we totally failed in this report in reducing the number of employees. They give you a description. Where did we gain? We did gain in certain departments. It's very clear what department made a good, honest attempt at this and got rid of high-priced employees and kept lower ones. They showed a very school district. Everyone, great comments by different school districts. Some of them said, we're losing the brain drain. You know, we're paying our best teachers. We put a lot of money in there. Every year, we pay teachers like myself to go to school, pick up 3 hours, 5 hours credit, and I can get more. I can get about $50 more per 3 degree credit hours every year. One woman here sent me a telegram. She said, you know, you shouldn't get rid of your best teachers. I had maxed out on this lady here 5 years ago. No way she can get more salary, but she got that experience that Alaska paid for. And now we want to get rid of her. I had people send telegrams down also and call me and said, look, I have met my maximum in the Anchorage school system. Let me go someplace where I can make more money. And I said, where are you going to go? You can't go to Mississippi. You can't go to Oregon. Lord knows you're not going to make a decent salary there. You can go to Connecticut. Connecticut is the only state, but they're overloaded with teachers. So you're not going to go anyplace to make a decent salary. I didn't fall for that one. The point is that throughout the report here on different school districts, Fairbanks did not make it. Sitka School did not make it. There was a false formula. Someone in administration said, last, we're going to make it. Here's how you do it. And the school board agreed with it, and it bombed out because of the wrong formula. Anchorage made it on some of our teachers, but it was overwhelming. Some teachers here hit, this is the best way to get rid of your best teachers with the highest investment. So why should you do that? You know, it's just the opposite with teachers fighting against tenure. And I told Governor Hickel that I'm not so sure I want to touch that tenure because we pay good teachers to stay in the system. In Anchorage, they just settled, and it was a close one, but the teachers thought that the package wasn't that big. We give them an incentive each year between $1,700 and $2,500 a year to stay in the system. And now we're going to pay you. Get out of it. You're making too much money. We got notes here from people saying, please allow me, this one here, allow her to add her sick leave to her retirement program, and then she can retire early. Well, whoopee. Are we in the business of making government employees happier and happier? They have to work less and less years now. You can be a bum like me, work for the state for 12 years as I have, and now make $1,800 a month. That's the system that this ludicrous socialist system has given me. Am I that worthy to the state? There's others making a lot more money on retirement. What I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen, we have given our state employees almost everything and anything they want. We have made the full cycle of sick leave, payment for early retirement, of COLA, of incentive programs to stay on, of merit raises, of salary increases, of more vacation days, everything and everything they wanted. And now they are so expensive, we're going to pay them to get out of the system. It doesn't matter what we invested. Mr. Speaker, I think this program has gone wild. and it is not to the benefit of the citizens of Alaska or our children. It is strictly a benefit for those employees who, in most cases, were going to retire in the first place. We can prove that by my latest statement right here from the department. They gave me the breakdown of the number of employees since January, since we started this session and since the new program was pointed in. They said the numbers are low now. There's 29, 30, and 40 per month. The numbers are low now because these people who would normally retire are waiting. Why should they retire early? Secondly, all your teachers, no way in the world they're going to retire right now. They got a contract. They don't want to bust a contract. But they said, you watch after, at this time the guy we thought was May when they sent out the slips for contracts and stuff like that. Right at the end of the school year, we are going to have a flood of people requesting because they probably would have retired anyway. And then we're going to spend $700,000, $800,000 for the new administration, for the new positions. You said it comes out of the retirement fund. But who puts the most money into the retirement fund? The state. This year we needed $15 million and we can't put it in there. Ladies and gentlemen, I think that we've gone full well, and I know it's dangerous. I probably lost 5 or 6 or 10 votes today talking, but it is not worth it to feed those kind of people who are getting a tremendous share of this state when other people need their help. Thank you.
We'll take Representative Kopanen, and then we'll kind of alternate between Representative
Thank
Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. One of the things that
got my mind made up
appalled me about the debate, especially about the amendments, is that the way we are, I am hearing people talk about state employees, about teachers, about university people, is the way, frankly, that I used to hear prejudiced Southerners talk about blacks, anti-Semites talk about Jews, and other undesirables. I mean, the attitude that I hear, it frankly does appall me. It's more innuendo, a nasty sort of subterranean sound about it. I don't like that particular kind of approach, and I don't think it has any place here. The way some of us joke about lawyers, of course. I'm not wild about this bill. The first time it was considered in previous legislation, the previous versions of the first time, I voted against it. And in fact, some of the things that have been said about it are quite true. And Fairbanks at the university, we had a very good, almost esoteric and very advanced commuter science department. Several of those people were very close friends of mine. They took early retirement and got much better paying jobs in Washington, D.C. for the National Science Foundation and for NASA than they were getting in Fairbanks. And they left not just because of the early retirement, but they left because they saw no future in a state that was continuing to cut the university system. Okay, we have the same thing with teachers and with others. But I think that this version of the bill is not only improved over that first version, but the second version. And rather than just reading the legislative budget and audit reports, which are very good and very direct, you should read the bill. The bill is different. For one thing, the state does not pay the employee's share of the retirement. They have to pay it. They owe it. And they have to pay it to the retirement system in order to get credit for those 3 years. They're not getting a free ride for those 3 years. They're paying into the retirement system for that benefit. True, that is being matched at the same level as if they were working for the state. But it foreshortens other benefits that they would be receiving during that same period. It does open the slots up for other employment. And so I urge my friends here to vote for, even though with the last amendment today, I'm really wondering about it. Thank you.
Representative Randy Phillips.
You know, Mr. Speaker, in concept, I support the RIP program. As you know, and hopefully everybody in this room knows, we're faced with declining oil revenues, declining amount of money we're going to be receiving, not only for this year, but the next 5-10 years down the pike. And I've given this speech for the last 4 or 5 years. I'll give it again. And that is, we need to reduce the budget. And reducing the budget is not just only reducing the dollar amounts, but also trying to find a way to reduce the number of employees of state government, and at the same time achieving that goal, finding a way for the employee to have an early out. I'll state for the record, the only reason there's two reasons basically why I'm not voting for this bill. Number one, it's basically the two amendments I offered. I thought that was a reasonable approach, not only for reducing the amount of money for the state general fund, as well as reducing the number of state employees, but also we have to start some budgetary planning process starting this year to meet those challenges and opportunities that we have in the next few years. Because if we don't, I'm going to tell you what, Mr. Speaker, there's going to be drastic reductions in the number of state employees, and it won't be a RIP. The two amendments I offered was no contract after 3 years, and to any reasonable person off the street, they'll say yes. And that's what they want. Yesterday, I offered amendment number one, which said, don't hire any new ones. Rip those who are eligible out and then deal with the ones in. Some of the members on the floor yesterday convinced me that there might be some exceptions to the rule. So what we did, we went back this morning, look at the statutes, Class 1A and Class 1B employees were exempt. And let me repeat it again. Here are the people who are exempt. Police, fire, jail, prison, correction institutions, hospital employees, public utilities, snow removal, sanitation, public schools, and other educational institution employees. And I might submit to you, Mr. Speaker, these employees have a direct function of government. So I don't think there's too much to argue about that. But, you know, sooner or later, we're going to have to, what's the old saying, meet our maker. And I just would rather do it sooner than later. And we're just asking for disaster here. And I just, I think with these two amendments put in there, it would have taken care of the employees that want to have the opportunity to rip out, yet at the same time, reduce the size of government and reduce the dollar amount for state government. And that's the only two reasons why I'm doing it. There's no hidden motives or bad feelings towards state employees. I think the individual employees themselves are very, very beneficial, not only for themselves, but the state of Alaska and the people they serve. I don't hold any hard feelings against them, but it's just the approach. If you took this to an average state employee, these two amendments, they would probably say yes. And they have said yes, because I've been talking to some of them this morning.
The call has been satisfied. Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My concern is that the unfunded liability obligations of state retirement programs just keeps creeping up every time one of these RIPs take place. Testimony in the Finance Committee was that the increase in the unfunded liability is just a little tiny bit this time, just like last time. But we all know that a little tiny bits, a lot of them add up to a major problem when it comes to unfunded liability in a retirement program. All you have to do is look at what unfunded liability did to some retirement programs for major corporations in the United States and states. It led to their collapse. It's proven by past history that more people have lost hard-earned retirement benefits
because of uncontrolled, unfunded liability that's been handed out by administrators of the plan, particularly politically motivated changes to plans. The bill comes due, Mr. Speaker. This bill does no favors to state employees that remain employed with the state of Alaska. It could jeopardize their future retirement in the long run if the state does not have the money to meet the unfunded liability.
Representative Ulmer.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we've done something very interesting here this afternoon. When we adopted Amendment Number 7 without objection, we amended a section that we removed yesterday. I hate to tell you this, but that's true. That's what we did. Amendment Number 7 amends the section pertaining to university employees on page 5, and we took that section out yesterday with the second part of Amendment Number 2, which we adopted. And I was planning to, under reconsideration, move to rescind our action to replace that section by rescinding our action and adopting amendment, the second part of Amendment Number 2. But parliamentarily speaking, I'm not sure where we are, Mr. Speaker, at this point in time.
With the rescission motion, in unusual circumstances of which it's unanimous, we've done it on several occasions, but I don't think there's any unanimity here on that issue, so we will follow the normal procedure that rescinding is not available if reconsideration is.
Well, just a parliamentary inquiry then, seeing that Amendment Number 7, which was adopted unanimously today, amends a section which is not technically in the bill, when we move under reconsideration to restore that section which was amended, will Amendment Number 7 then just carry with it?
When you bring a bill back for you in under reconsideration, it's as if that bill has never been heard before and thus subject to amendments.
Well, this should be interesting. Mr. Speaker, I won't, under third reading, just in terms of a very brief comment, my only comment is to ask members who have not read the Division of Legislative Budget and Audit's report on the RIP program, I really would urge them to do it, because I believe if they did so, their comfort level would be significantly higher than what I've heard today on the floor. If I might have the permission of the body to read just two paragraphs very briefly. As summarized by the schedule on the opposite page, the estimated savings for the 1989 RIP program totaled $22.9 million. The savings were generated mostly by the incremental difference in the salary and benefit costs between the typically higher paid RIP participant and their lower paid replacement. The top five employers with a total estimated savings of $16.5 million accounted for 72% of the statewide total. The state of Alaska and the Anchorage School District had the two highest savings. It goes on to talk about the savings to the University of Alaska and other employers, demonstrating, in terms that I find very, very difficult to find fault with, the kind of savings that can be achieved when management has this a device available to it, and now, as we have amended this legislation, has the opportunity to do so when the economic conditions justify it. Mr. Speaker, I would urge members to vote yes.
I am going to invoke Mason's Manual 102 in relation with this. I don't think we're going to convince anybody one way or the other at this point on the issue, but Representative Taylor, I don't believe you have spoken on this in third reading. You don't have to.
No, I don't.
Okay. Yeah, this era of cooperation is... Are you ready for a question? Representative Martin, all points appear to be important to you, and what's important to me is Mason's Manual 102. I'm sorry. Every member has copies of the legislative budget and audit thing, and well, there's been some people that have accused others of not reading the bill, but that's... No, please spare us that. Are you ready for the question?
The question is, shall House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 337, Finance, amended House, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
28 yeas, 10 nay.
House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 337, Finance, amended House, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on final passage be considered the roll call on the two effective date clauses, sections 17 and 18.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, I wanted to just serve notice of reconsideration.
Well, we have effective dates.
Go.
Okay. Are there any objection to the adoption of the effective dates clause? You made the motion, did you not, Mr. Majority Leader, for the two effective date clauses?
Yeah, I just have the floor and I will ask for reconsideration. So,
okay. Are there any objections to the adoption of the effective date clauses? Hearing none, adopted. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on this particular bill.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill.
I ask to take up reconsideration of my vote on this bill on the same calendar day.
I will rule that out of order, Representative Taylor.
The only reason, Mr. Speaker, I would ask appeal the chair, and then I will withdraw that. But let me appeal the chair for just a moment. That is that we're all familiar with the bill. We've got all the materials in front of us. If, in fact, we're going to work our way back through the complex process of going through reconsideration, then rescission, so as to clean up the error that I think the member has correctly pointed out to us, now is probably the best time to do it while the attention of the membership is focused on it, as opposed to trying to dredge it up at 11 o'clock tonight.
Well, that's absolutely true that it should be done in this sitting. But at the same time, I want the parties that are dealing with it to do it correctly so we're not sitting here at ease. Would the House stand at ease a minute, Mr. Majority Leader?
Appointment that the Republican caucus finds that this bill is even on the floor. We were assured repeatedly by the administration that there would not be a supplemental of this type. In fact, we were told repeatedly in the fall of this year as the budget was being created that there probably would not be any supplementals. Now, some of us knew full well that there would have to be a few items for the legislature, for some other departments that would be absolutely necessary because of mistakes made in the vetoing process and some mistakes made maybe even in the budgeting process as far as short funding, whether those were intentional mistakes or not. So I think many of us realize there would have to be, because we all understand the vagaries of the student count and our educational formula, that there would have to be probably a supplemental there too. And so though it was with a great deal of reluctance, the first supplemental bill had some essential necessity about it, and certain things had to be done within that bill. I think we all agreed with that. We may not have agreed on the final price of that one, but we certainly agreed with those aspects of it. Today, we're faced with $58 million of additional state expenditure. What's it for? Going down through the bill, it's for practically every department of state government. Apparently, there was no commissioner, or very few, who could live within the budget they were given. As managers, they were incapable of handling their departments within the budget they were given, and as a consequence, had to come back to us now and ask for increases over last year's budget. Someone asked me the other day, how are we doing on cutting the budget? I said, it's real easy in Juneau. You just pass a big supplemental, and then you just cut the heck out of the next year's budget because you only pass, if you pass $100 million worth of supplementals and you pass $80 million worth of increases, then you can tell the public when you go home you saved them $20 million. That's exactly what we're doing here. We got $58 million bucks we're tagging on to 1992, and we've only got 40-some days left in the fiscal year. Or fit, what is it, 60, 70-some days? We go July 1, it is about 45 days, yeah. Well, that's over $1 million a day that we desperately have to close out this year. How they made it this far through the year, I don't know. I guess they borrowed, robbed Peter to pay Paul to keep this business of government alive up to this point. But to say that those of us who consider ourselves fiscal conservatives are not disappointed at seeing this bill on the floor would be a gross understatement. We are more than disappointed. We are offended by this bill and the actions of those managers and commissioners who failed to abide by the budget they were given last year. All of this cannot just be mistakes in the vetoing process. All of it cannot be mistakes in the budgeting process. All of it cannot be just the fact that somebody guessed a little bit wrong on the numbers of people that were going to be impacting their department or their agency. No, there's a whole bunch of it here that says we weren't capable of living within the budget you gave us. We chose not to. I think that's probably the part that's most offensive to the people of the state of Alaska, is that the very managers and commissioners of their departments are saying to them, we just chose to spend more money. We know you told us not to, but golly gee, we felt we needed it, so we went and spent it. Now fill up the coffers again, pay for the bounce check, so to speak. A lot of this money's been spent by departments. If they had to rely upon a balanced budget amendment right now, their bank account would be in the red. Maybe we ought to charge them some kind of bounce check sort of penalty to the department that can't live up to what they're told to do. Maybe that's one way to drive accountability back into the system. But to reward those departments that fail to abide by your budget and what you told them to do will not drive any accountability. I say that's what we're doing here. $58 million worth. And I know all about the firefighters and the $12 million there. And some other major items in here. Now, they may be accounting transactions. They may have been mistakes from last year. Even so, we've got to learn to live within our means, and this supplemental does not encourage our administrators to do that. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Randy Phillips.
Speaker, I too, like the minority leader, have essentially the same feelings on this piece of legislation. You know, I had an interesting conversation with a neighbor of mine yesterday on the budget itself. And frankly, we're not living in the real world. This legislative body, the next one, the bureaucracy, just not living in a real world. The real world is we have declining oil revenues, which correspondingly means declining dollars for the state of Alaska, and we're not doing a thing about it, not realistically. And this is just one symptom of that problem. $58 million increase in the state budget, just can't support it.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, one of the problems I have with this, especially in this late day of the game, is that other measures could have been done to decrease the cost of government. One of them is that the legislature or the governor himself, as has happened in other states, have tried to control the cost of government by giving people furloughs, letting them have one extra day off a month without pay. It came out that in those states where they first did that, they state employees were raising holy cane. But later on, when they found out they could add that Monday or that Friday to a long weekend, it became very nice for the employees to choose that one day of a month that they would take off on their own, saving the government millions, and at the same time, they had a longer weekend when they really needed it more than a regular holiday. So there's a very good human ways of addressing the shortage of budget. What we have done over the last few years, I think, you who will vote for this particular additional appropriation, is to allow the administrators to control the budget. We have been told before that budgeting by obligation is unconstitutional. Only we, the legislatures, can appropriate monies for whatever we want. But what we've done over the years, as these supplementals have grown, and they really have grown, it used to be maybe $2 million, $5 million, $8 million. Now you're talking $100 million increase. By obligation, because the departments have already overspent, knowing very well they overspent, and then pleading to us and saying, well, we need this money, we need this for that, we got this crisis. And in no way, shape, or form did they take the necessary measures that one would suppose they do in private industry and cut back to meet their budget. So I say that if you want the bureaucracy to continue to know that they have complete control over the budget, whether we by constitution or not have, then fine, vote for this particular amendment. Next year, you're going to have another adjustment. Someday, you must put your foot down, and I think, ladies and gentlemen, now's the time to show them that you are no longer going to accept administrators and division heads continuously spending money that they do not have. This is budgeting by obligation, not by as you chose to appropriate a year ago. I think tone this down. No one's going to sink. Those bureaucrats can let the people off on voluntary furloughs or make other means in the next 45 days to drastically cut the cost of their government. And then next year, live under what you will give them.
Representative Gail Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have two questions for the preparers of this bill, if I could have them answered. On page 10, section 54, it was my understanding that basically all of the $3 million appropriated for the ANWR promotion was either expended or has been obligated. I'd like to know what the figure is, if there is any left. And then over on page 12, section 69, we all know that our fiscal year and the contract years for contract employees are different. But why can't we put in the full amount, when we're doing the budget, full amount for the entire year so we don't have to come back at another time for the six-month supplemental on the COLA increases? It just seems to me, you know, I don't know all the technicalities of it, but it seems to me unreasonable that we don't put it in, plug in it ahead of time.
Representative Boyer, the first part of that?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, on the first part of it with regard to ANWR, I had received a memorandum from Becky Gay on that very item, and currently there is actually about a $1.6 million to $1.7 million in that fund. A million of it is tied up in an RFP that is out for response, and so that will be obligated but will not be expended until FY93. About 300 and some odd thousand is required for the balance of the fiscal years and salaries and other contractual commitments, which leaves about somewhere in the neighborhood of 380 some odd thousands of dollars that will otherwise lapse, and that's why the extension of the lapse date is important. It will keep their budget working toward the ultimate goal when it's coupled with something that may appear in another budget item or budget later in the evening or the session.
Representative Havar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With respect to the other question, I don't know. I don't know why we don't do it that year, or on a fiscal year basis, why we don't put the full amount in. You know, I guess probably because it'd mean that we'd have to increase the budget by $6 million in this way, and everyone would scream and yell that we'd raise the budget by $6 million, and no one's wanted to go that extra step. Yet, really, that would probably be a more realistic way of doing it. We do it, we budget every year, and half of it goes backwards, and the other half of it goes forward. So, with respect to the overall supplemental, Mr. Speaker, everything in here except for six items either were offered by the governor and his administration, mm-hmm. or would have been had they been available at the time that they put the supplemental together. This Section 24, the university settlement, just came about the other day and would have been submitted by the governor had not, or had it come in a little earlier. And, Speaker, I guess what you have to do is look at this administration and their ability to manage government. They came in last year, I think, with a lot of good intentions, but a lot of quite a bit of lack of experience, really, with government. And as a result, when they went through and cut the budget, they vetoed a number of things down below a realistic level in the hope and with the enthusiasm that they'd be able to grab a hold of those things and hold them down somehow. And they weren't able to do it. And I think that their commitment in this year's budget is, again, to try to hold down the supplemental. I believe that in their veto process, they'll be much more careful. I also believe that they have a better handle of government. It's a transition period. The first year, you got to give them a little bit of the doubt. This next year really is a true test of whether or not this administration can get a hold of the reins of this government. And the director of OMB and others in the governor's office have assured me that they believe that they have the controls in place now. Their administration is fully on board. The controls are in place so that the supplementals will not appear next year. They have a commitment, and whoever's here next year is going to have to decide whether or not the supplementals that come forth next year are justified or not. With respect to Section 12, fire suppression costs, $12 million of this budget. We do fire suppressions every year in a supplemental, and the reason for that is that we don't know what it's going to be. If we have a nice rainy season, perhaps next year, they won't have to put any money into the supplemental, and everybody will say, by God, you really kept control of your supplemental costs last year. But another big part of the supplemental is the Department of Corrections. Department of Corrections, this administration vetoed a significant amount out of the corrections budget, even though many of us told them, you're low enough, you can't go any lower, we think you're underfunded already. They said, you're wrong, we're going to veto some, and as a result, we're seeing a supplemental now for a big portion of that. The Section 35 rural airport maintenance is a little over $2 million. That was money that we took out of the budget last year. They went out and got fees. The fees went into the general fund. They asked for the ability to spend this money because otherwise they've been doing the maintenance. They just haven't gotten the authorization to use the funds yet. And what they've done is use money from other things. And if we don't appropriate this money to them, it will mean that probably spring maintenance will be deferred or they'll have to close down the airports for the balance of the fiscal year. It doesn't make much sense to do it that way. Mr. Speaker, I think that this is an example of a supplemental that was offered by the administration. I believe that this administration went through it and did try to pinch down and keep hold of the costs coming in as supplemental. I believe that they'll be better able to do it next year and even better able to the year after that with this administration. But this is not the typical supplemental. This is not a supplemental, as we've seen in the past, as some of the ones I've seen on the floor in this legislature, where we've seen a supplemental that has been tremendously loaded up. Very few amendments were adopted at the Finance Committee. It was very difficult. I'm real happy that we were as tough as we were when the supplemental came before us. We didn't load it up with things. I think that the Finance Committee did a responsible job with it, and I think that we ought to vote for it. And sometimes I almost wish that those speaking against it would convince or be able to convince somehow enough people to vote against it, because then there'd be chaos. And things would be turned around. Failing this supplemental would be a terrible, terrible mistake.
Representative Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is a few items in here that came to light that are in the Finance Committee that are questionable on whether the state should continue promoting the vision of the deep pocket on rewarding and paying off claims. I would suggest any member of this body that hasn't yet had the opportunity to get the list of the organizations that's going to split the $1,185,620 in Section 8. Some interesting reading on who's going to get those awards that was awarded by our court system. We talked a little bit about finance. We ought to move the responsibility for budgeting for those claims back into the court systems where it used to be. So they have to, whatever they award, they have to come up with the dollars budget-wise. The Attorney General's office testified that constitutionally or legally, we don't have to pay those claims. There's no recourse. It's already been decided that if the legislature doesn't appropriate the money, it isn't paid. By paying these, and I sure hope some of you get that list of a two-page typewritten list of who's getting this money, take a look at who's getting it. You get a good idea about how they continue in business. And it's very interesting when asked a question of the representative from the Attorney General's office, I think it was Mr. Battello, how many times does a state in a winning case get awarded court costs? And do we collect 100% of the time or 80% of the time? Those are the kind of questions that really get to be interesting in the answers that they give you when you're listening to the testimony in finance. As far as Section 29 for the $12 million for firefighting, the co-chairman did move to reduce that from $13 million, and I applaud him for that. But the syndrome in the forest division, Bob Dick manages, he's a real nice guy, but if you've ever been out there where they're fighting a forest fire and see the overkill involved in airplanes, equipment, manpower, you can really appreciate and understand why they have to come in for a supplemental all the time. I'd like to also have you check on what the total revenue from the sale of forest products in the state of Alaska on state land is. I mean, is the business of fighting forest fires bigger than harvesting the timber? I think you'll find it's about five times bigger. Unless it's threatening the private property as far as improvements on private property, I think that there's the forest division in the state of Alaska has a long way to go on revising their policy on where to put our dollars. Section 59 on page 11, we have two disasters there, or three disasters. Kodiak rainfall disaster, Seward sewer lagoon disaster, and the Diomede fire disaster. The Kodiak rainfall disaster is in there for $650,000, but that isn't what it really costs. It's over $1.5 million so far. The sewer lagoon disaster is going to be over $1 million, and that's why they have to get legislative approval. Because anything over $1 million has to have legislative approval once they reach that maximum. The Diomede fire disaster of the utilities is sort of like rewarding underinsurance. They were underinsured. They've been saving money on premiums for a long time. The state is insuring it by this disaster right here, reimbursement. And I'm not questioning that it's a needed facility. Electricity in the North Country is a matter of life and death. But the fact is, some policies are going to have to be changed, and be changed doggone quick. These $1.5 million bailouts are not in the best interest of all Alaska. On the last page on Section 79, we got a real quickie addition there in finance for $200,000 for the University of Alaska Southeast. Emergency replacement of a fax computer. Just pooped. Out of the air all of a sudden, the last session. Mr. Speaker, my ex-employer has three surplus faxes, pretty good-sized fax machines that's available for a nickel on the dollar. Maybe they can save a few bucks there. As far as if this is the most slimmed-down version of what's really needed, I question that. But here it is.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the question was asked, is this supplemental justified? Some of it is, some of it isn't. Certainly, I believe that a natural disaster such as fire that we have no control over, and that supplemental is, in fact, justified. But most of the things in this supplemental are not justified, in my opinion. Would we have chaos if they were not funded? No. We wouldn't have chaos, Mr. Speaker. The reason why we wouldn't have chaos is there's enough in most of these departments vacant PCN numbers that they would just simply pay their bill like they always do with the vacant PCN numbers. Mr. Speaker, the thing that appalls me about it is that we're at the end of the session. We have till July the 1st. And I believe that this administration did come in.